Hello, and what is up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. It has been 3 whole months, everybody. I think I went back and double-checked, and the last episode we did was back on September 10th, just as we were getting into the thick of harvest, and now we are out of the thick of harvest and fully in recovery mode after what was a very herky-jerky, kind of stop-starty kind of year out here in Napa. We're going to get into a full kind of vintage recap. You know, what happened, what to expect from 2025, some of the amazing things that happened, some of the challenging things that happened, and what, you know, you all can expect in a few years as these wines start to come out and kind of where the hype is going to be as we start diving into these wines and seeing how they progress over the next 6 months, year, couple of years, and get them into bottle. Before we dive in, as usual, a couple of very quick and brief announcements. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow the show wherever you're consuming your podcasts. You can follow us on any of our social networks as well at MTGA Wines. We're most active on YouTube, Instagram, The Book of Face, and we do post every once in a while on the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can also head to our websites, mtgawines.com or blairpaytonwines.com. You can find out more about who we are, what we do. Specifically on mtgawines.com, you can sign up for our mailing list, Wine Club. You can also submit topics and questions to the show. If you scroll down to the bottom of that homepage there, you can find a little email like box form thing. Fill that out. It'll go directly to me. And we'll try and answer your questions to the best of my ability here. Doing the thing live for the most part. Well, this is recorded, I guess. But I post it right after I, you know, record it typically. Anyway, let's just dive right into it. This was... For me, I've only had one other harvest that kind of rivals this one in terms of madness, and that was 2022. And the reason for that, and some of you may remember this for those of you that have been listening for a while now, that was a year in which I took over the winemaking operations for two of our family labels, Anderson's Con Valley Vineyards as well as Ghost Horse Vineyards, at least for a couple of months until their winemaker, who is on full time there, was able to get back into the fray come November. This year was very much the same. So I was pulling triple duty through basically from Labor Day on. I realized that once I was kind of here in town and gearing up for our own harvest season, we basically didn't have a day off. I think I've had two like relaxing days in the last 3 months, which of course my grand excuse for not getting episodes posted is that I did not have an hour to spare to record anything, much less get it edited and out to you. I actually tried to record something last week to kind of get right back into it, and we were going to post that. I was down in Southern California getting a little R&R, doing a little bit of just kind of busy work, stuff like that, kind of just getting away for a few days. And we tried to post it. Some of you might have accidentally downloaded it, or hopefully it got deleted. It was like, it sounded like once I got it all uploaded, everything was like posted and ready to go. I always listen to everything like a little bit just to make sure it sounds good. And it sounded like I was yelling into a tin can. I have no idea what happened between my microphone and the webcam and everything I was doing there. But that episode is basically going to be what we're getting in today, the 2025 season. And some of you have your ear to the ground. You may have been out here over the last couple of months, so you kind of know what the vibe was a little bit. I think that this is going to be one of those years that is going to be a sleeper. And the reason it's going to be a sleeper is it's kind of this cool, rainy vibe that we had. If you're watching the video of this, please try to ignore the rose gold martini glass that I'm using. It's Brittany's. I didn't have another one laying around. At least not one that would fit that amount of a Vesper. Anyway, so this, because it was such a cool year, I mean, going into August, to kind of set the stage for what was going on this season, it was the coolest year we'd had since like 1982, early or mid 80s, something like that. And it kind of leveled out a little bit. You know, very typically, to kind of give you a little perspective, like our white wine stuff that we bring in for rosé typically come in like the third week of August, maybe the last week of August. It was very much after Labor Day. I want to say it was like September 4th or 6th, something like that, is when we started bringing fruit in. And even some fruit by that point was already at the winery, coming from Lodi, as well as some Chardonnay that my folks were getting picked. They had already picked that before I kind of signed on to help them or assist in managing their operations this year. So it was a later season for sure, probably closer to what our kind of historical average is. I mean, realistically for me, it's not uncommon to have white wines come in during the first week of September or kind of late August. Like that's kind of my margin of error in the back of my head. Any earlier than that, you're like, oh, it's a really early year. Any later than that, you're like, ooh, it's a really cool year. And that goes back to like a 2011, even a 2023, for example. 23 was one of those very long, drawn out harvests as well, because we just didn't have a lot of heat as we're getting into kind of the home stretch of the harvest season. Now, the big curveball this year, and, you know, we talk, you know, there's always, you know, a kind of how a vintage is defined, and it's sometimes it's remarkably unremarkable because nothing really happens. I was talking to somebody a couple weeks back about the 2019 vintage. In fact, Brittany was doing a pouring somewhere. She was pouring some 19, and she asked me about it, like, what happened in 2019? And for the life of me, couldn't remember. I'm like, I don't think anything. Like, it was just kind of a line it up, knock it down year. Again, kind of remarkably unremarkable, very high quality, but there wasn't anything that made it like stand out in terms of a weather event, let's say. Where in like 2022, we had that giant heat spike that we've talked so much about. And this year, actually speaking of 2022, was almost the exact opposite of that. We're coming through a very cool, very temperate growing season, and we get rain in the middle of harvest, which doesn't happen very often. It was probably more than we would have liked to see, but not so much that it really degraded what we were trying to do. I know, you know, depending on, you know, where your vineyard was at, how ripe it was currently, you probably fared a little bit better if it was further along the line. If you were really lagging behind, I know there were some growers out there that overcropped some things this year. It was kind of a bumper crop year, and folks had a hard time getting things ripe, which was a terrible fucking mistake, given the season we were having and kind of the great market in general, but more on that in a little bit. You know, it just, it that creates challenges, as you might imagine. Now, you're having a hard time getting fruit ripe. This rain that's coming in kind of dilutes the juice content a little bit. The sugar levels aren't getting to where they need to be to make these really big, rich, kind of opulent style of Napa wines. This is going to be very, even though like 23 was that cool, long, drawn out vintage, it stayed warm enough and we didn't get that rain. So it really helped us kind of finish that season out, even though it was very late. We're talking into November for some of us, right? We're just like, sheesh, I just hope we get finished at some point before Thanksgiving. That would be outstanding. This year, because of the rain, it's kind of like you start seeing some mold and mildew issues. You start seeing problems out in the vineyard like that. And you're like, man, at a certain point, we're just going to have to bring stuff in because it's going to get worse before it gets worse in this situation. You might have to turn on your wind machines. You might have to walk up and down your vine rows with leaf blowers, you know, to help dry things out. It was that kind of year to try and just make the best of it that you could. Now, for me personally, these are the kind of years I thrive in. I love these cool years. I love the restraint you get. I love the finesse that you need to have to make great wine in these years. If you're trying to do the big, juicy, jammy thing, you're up a creek without a paddle right now. Like, there's really not two ways around it. You might have to do some reverse osmosis to concentrate things. You might have added a little midnight magic, you know, to try and sort some things out. More on that in a little bit as well. Now, critically, I you know, this is going to be one of those times where you're not going to want to believe the hype, because this is the kind of year that's like a 1998, it's like a 2011. If I shake my crystal ball that I have with me right now, my guess is that this vintage is going to get panned because it's not what people are going to quote unquote expect from Napa, which is kind of bullshit, but whatever. This is the kind of the issue, is that, you know, there is kind of this voluptuous nature to Napa wines right now. And if you start to see this little bit of restraint start to creep into the style of some winemakers, which it already has kind of in, you know, in a very small amount, but a cool year certainly kind of pushes and shoves you in that direction. I'm very curious to see how people respond to it. You know, again, these are the years I dream of, because I think more expressive, more interesting, more complex wines come out of these years. I think that when you're dealing with these big, juicy, super ripe wines, very often you lose a lot of the finesse and subtleties in some of them, and you don't get these kind of nice nuances that take a wine from being good and make them great. Just my own two cents, again, very subjective, but that's one of the reasons why I do love these years. Because even if you can't get your sugar levels to where you want to go, you can still see, you know, seeds will brown, you know, the phenolic still might be a little rough around the edges, but you're going to physiologically get pretty damn close to where you want to be. Now, if, you know, so many of us will also, you know, we mentioned mold and mildew and rain and how that can cause a problem. Well, most of us are, one, sorting in the vineyard, making sure that when we're picking, we're not picking anything that's fuzzy or that's degraded in some way. And then two, we do a second round of sorting at the winery as well. So we're at least getting many, many eyeballs on all the clusters and berries that are coming in. So, you know, that's just standard operating procedure. And it is for so many of us out here. So the idea that, oh, the rain caused all these problems, you're going to have all this mildew and stuff that gets into the wine. No, you're not. Depending on the size and scale of your production, of course, because there are certainly some people that machine harvest or pick indiscriminately because they're going for yields. And some of that stuff's going to end up in there. Now, let's be real here. If you're, you know, a large producer or even a small producer that's doing that kind of stuff, just kind of indiscriminately going, there's going to be plenty of fining. There's going to be plenty of filtering that's going to be done. It's not as though it's going to have an immensely negative impact. It's not like the wine's going to be bad necessarily, because it can certainly be doctored up and, quote, you know, unquote, fixed in the cellar, you know. But, you know, you are going to lose some quality there. You're going to lose some complexity. You're going to have to do some things to fix that. And that usually means you got to do other things to kind of balance that wine out, right? It's why average wines are sometimes just delightfully average. There's nothing particularly exciting about them. You're not going to write home, but it's a good Tuesday night pizza wine, and it's fine for what it is. You know, it's, you know, I use the analogy about fast food all the time. Like, it's fine for what it is. Is it the best meal you're going to have? Probably not. Is it the healthiest meal you're going to have? Probably not. But you know what? I'm driving back from Southern California. I'm a little hungover. All I want is some Taco Bell. Just give me a Doritos Loco taco and some Crunchwrap Supreme, some fire sauce. I'm happy as a clam. Like, we're good. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's just what you need. It's not that big of a deal. Don't worry about it. If it tastes good in the long run, it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. It's fine. So, you know, this is the vibe of the year. You know, very similar to 2022, but again, the opposite in that, you know, you with this rain coming in, cool weather already in the forecast, it's like, do we pick before the rain? Can we get away with picking before the rain? Or do we have to start because we got to start at some point? You know, can we pick during or shortly thereafter? Probably not, because it's going to dilute your fruit. So you're going to have to wait for after. And you're probably going to have to wait at least many, many days after to bring that fruit in. Then boom, another rainstorm hits. And you're like, well, I guess we're waiting again. It was interesting as we got into, I think it was the third week of October, maybe it was the second week of October. And there were a lot of people that were kind of wrapping up at that point, even despite the cool year. It was like everyone saw the rain coming and people just started bringing stuff in because they're like, again, it gets worse before it gets worse in this kind of situation. And I was talking to, I was at a wine dinner with a few folks from Hunter Glen. Shout out to the Shiflets who were buying some fruit from this year. We're there with Fire Tree Vineyards, of course, Jericho Canyon. And Julian Fayard was there because he was the winemaker for the Chardonnay that Fire Tree is making. And Julian had mentioned that probably in the second week of October, let's say, even if third week, it'd be even crazier. But he was saying that there was still about 300 tons of fruit that he had to bring in. And, you know, tanks are full. They're going to have to put some stuff in bins. It's like, what do you press off? Like, this certainly became a chess game kind of vintage for some people because of the volume you're doing, how much space you actually have, and the urgency to get it done as quickly as possible. So it's going to be one of those years. It's going to be a little variable. I think that there's going to be some, you know, not just vintage variation here, but producer variation here, where you're going to see people who, you know, and like a guy like Julian, like he makes a lot of wine every year. And 300 tons sounds like a lot of fruit. I had someone in the second week, another good friend of ours in the second week of September had already crushed 800, had barely gotten harvest started. And she was already a gangster, dwarfing everything that I could possibly do in terms of volume. So it's all relative. This is kind of my point here. But you're going to have to deal with that on the consumer end as well, because you guys are going to have these vintages, or this vintage, start to come out into the world with some white wines, which actually, total, I got to go on this tangent here. If you're into white wine, even remotely, these cool years are the best. I'm not kidding. The best years for white wine from Napa, Northern California. Period. Full stop. Don't at me. They are the best, because with these cool years, these white wine grapes get a little bit of extra hang time that they just typically don't. You know, normally, like I said, late August, maybe early September, if you're looking at, you know, at least early September, maybe mid-September for some of these white wine varieties, and the sugar levels are staying low, the acidity is staying high, you're like, oh, like you're going to get some real, I mean, the white wines that we have in the cellar right now are some of the best we've ever made. I could say the same about 2023. You know, this is just these vintages for white wine from cool, you know, areas that are typically warm but are cool for a year. I mean, it's going to be gangster. Like, these are going to be, this might be like a vintage of the decade just for white wine specifically because of this, you know, cool weather trend that we had. And 23, I would say, is kind of along the same line. Just outstanding white wines from these cool vintages. The reds, you know, to get back on track here, because that's, what, of course, what we make the most of out in this area, might be a little bit more hit or miss, but it doesn't mean they're bad. And I want to kind of distinguish those two thoughts here, because, you know, some of them are going to hit, you know, some vineyards are going to get to where people want to go. Maybe they're a little more restrained and maybe like a tad edgy, but like they're going to get to where people kind of want them to be and really reflect their house style as a wine producer. There are going to be some that are going to be a miss in the early days because they're just going to be wound up really tight. This is what happened in 1998. This is what happened in 2011, is that these vintages were critically panned. They're cold, wet vintages. 1998 in particular was one of those because it came off this golden child of a year, 1997, which was arguably, critically, the vintage of the decade of the 90s, which I thoroughly disagree with because I thought the wines were overbearing, overripe, and frankly didn't stand the test of time. And to this day, anytime someone asks about how 97's doing, what I tell people is I wish it was a 98, because the 98s are gangster, just like the 2011s are gangster. Now, the trick with these wines that are amiss, though, is that it's patience, right? We talk so much about, you know, how wines age, why they age, what creates, you know, why a wine gets better with time. And when these wines are wound up and they're going to be tighter, they're going to be edgier, the acidity is going to be higher, the tannins might be a little rougher. Those things, given time, can, not always, but they certainly can soften up, round out, richen up, and it's going to get to where you want to go. The issue, of course, is like the 2011s, they probably started tasting like phenomenal in like 2016, 17, like a good 5+ years down the line, where a lot of the, you know, when these wines come out as a current release, they might be 18 months to 3 years old. So they might just be wines before their time. You know, this is something that we're considering with our 2023s right now because it was a cool kind of long hang time vintage. Is as we get into next year, are the 2023s actually ready? Some of them are. Some of them are actually tasting great, very happy with where they're at. There are others where I'm like, okay, we're giving them another year in bottle anyway because that's our SOP. Those are our standard operating procedures for our big reds. It's like give them their time. But it's a judgment call for us. And 2025 is not going to be any different. It's going to be one of these years where we're going to bottle these up and we're going to say, okay, are they actually ready when we want them to be ready, or do they need more time? That is the benefit of being a small producer sometimes and having a library program and all this, is that you can kind of push things back and move things around and make it work for you and not have to stick to kind of the regular regimented release schedule. I know that's annoying for some of you guys out there who want kind of the new fresh stuff. You don't necessarily want to revisit some of these older vintages, but you know, the goal for many of us small producers, of course, is to give you the best wine we possibly can and to make sure that when it arrives at your doorstep, that it tastes great. And this might be one of those years that 3 years from now, the wines just need more time. Again, I can shake my crystal ball as hard as I want here. It's not working all that well. It's on the fritz. I think I just need to change out the batteries on it. But as soon as I have that information, I'll get it to you about what the future holds for this vintage, these wines, and what you can expect from it. Now, we've talked a lot about the challenging year for grape growing here. We talked about grape prices. We talked about contract negotiations. We've basically, for the last like 18 months, we've been all in on the business side of things on this podcast. We've talked so much about it because of the tumultuous nature of the wine industry right now. I want to touch on that just briefly. I don't want to beat the dead horse here. If you're new here, you can go back and check out any of the wine business episodes that we've done over the last year and get a good idea of, you know, what's been going on between, you know, kind of the surplus of wine, the, you know, pricing and discounting that's happening, the businesses that have gone under, some large businesses that have gone under or consolidated, you know, what grape growers are dealing with right now. Now, this is the thing that is going to be a tough pill to swallow around the state of California, not just Napa, but I'll try and give you kind of Napa's perspective. This is happening kind of all over the place, but this is something that certainly is hitting here at home. Number one, there are a lot of people that are replanting right now. It's estimated that's like around 7% of Napa is being replanted right now, which, given the downturn in kind of wine sales and the market and everything, good time to do it. You know, you don't need that volume right now. You might as well, you know, replant if you got some cash in the bank, kind of maybe restructure your farming, diversify potentially if you want to do that kind of thing. I mean, you've got some options here. So replanting is not necessarily a bad thing, but you do lose that volume that is, of course, available for winemaking. So about 7% of Napa, give or take, right? On top of that, the early numbers, and we'll see more of this when we get the grape crush report this following winter, which for those of you that might remember, we talked about that earlier this year, that in 2024, when we're comparing that to, say, 2023, the last 2 years, in 2024 specifically, I think it was about 14,000 tons of Cabernet didn't get picked. Now, that's a combination of stuff that didn't get sold as well as stuff that likely got torn out and replanted. But that's a pretty big drop off, and that's just Cabernet Sauvignon. And that was just 23 to 24. Now in this year, specifically 2025, the early estimates are that about 20% of Napa didn't get picked or produced. I'm gonna let that soak in while I have a sip of my martini real fast. 20%. So, and I think that number, frankly, is conservative. So let's just say it's on the money, right? That means that in 2025, there's about 27%, give or take whatever margin of error you want to throw in there, of Napa that did not produce wine. The volume has decreased significantly, and that is going to be an interesting thing that all of us are going to have to deal with. Now, I kind of made a little quip about growers like overcropping and making bad decisions in farming. And this is something that I think is depending on who you ask and what's going on. But I'll give you my two cents. And again, this is just my opinion. You know, being that I don't own any of the vineyards that I source from, we didn't have any of these issues because I worked luckily very well with all the folks that we were sourcing fruit from. There are folks that had more fruit available that we very kindly said no to, because it's not in the budget this year. We've downsized production a little bit, like so many other people, just because of kind of the high yields and the wine that we've made from prior vintages. So we're kind of scaling back just a touch, just so that we can get back to it next year. Now, The issue, I think, because I saw this and I've heard this from multiple people, and from what I'm hearing, that this was another bumper crop year. And for those of you that don't know what that means, it means that yields are higher than average, right? And pretty significantly higher than average. And my like ear to the ground a little bit, and a little bit of the vibe that I'm getting is that there were a fair amount of farmers out there that kept that crop on the vine. And what that does is it slows down development a little bit. It can, right? Because there's more fruit, the vine needs more energy, more heat, whatever, to keep things kicking along. There's one very good friend of mine in particular that asked a grower at least 4 or 5 times, hey, you got to drop some fruit. This stuff's not getting ripe. We're already seeing it well behind where other vineyards are relative to you. Like, you got to drop fruit. They didn't. bailed on the contract to the tune of like lots of tons of grapes, right? Because the fruit didn't get to where it needed to be. Now, you can pull out of some, you know, tinfoil real quick, wrap that around your head. And if you want to conspiracy theory this real quick, that could be just for crop insurance. Like, hey, rain's in the forecast. We're not dropping anything. We're going to, and frankly, when the rain came in, it was too late to drop anything anyway. Like, you're so far behind the eight ball as it is. But, you know, if there's spoilage and you can't, and that fruit's not viable, from what I understand, you can claim it on your crop insurance. But if it's not sellable, that's not exactly an insurable event. So the tinfoil hat is that, you know, growers weren't, number one, weren't putting a lot of energy. This is going to sound so shitty, so I apologize, but this is what is being talked about, at least in, and maybe my colleagues are a bunch of assholes, but I know I'm one of those. So this is kind of like the stuff that we're talking about. It's like, did people just like not care as much because they're like, hey, number one, we're not going to put a bunch of money and time into farming and dropping fruit and doing all these things. We're not getting the money we want for our fruit. People are not picking up as much, you know, tonnage this year. We don't have the money to go in and like drop all this fruit. So maybe there's, you know, financial limitations to what growers were actually able to do. Two is the tinfoil hat theory is that we're going to wait. We're going to say, hey, this fruit wasn't viable or didn't, you know, it's spoiled in some way, shape or form. Insert rainstorms here. And we're going to claim it on crop insurance because it's going to mold, it's going to mildew, and yeah, we're screwed. We can't get it picked. No one will buy it when it's in this condition, right? Like it's shitty stuff to say or even consider, I guess. But, you know, this is something that we dealt with as I started working for the family again and looking at some of the vineyards that, you know, my dad farms and they look over is that they were cropped really, really heavy. And there were sections of those vineyards that simply weren't getting any riper than where they were going to be. They kind of just stalled out at a certain point. And that's kind of what I'm hearing from around the valley is that it kind of hit a wall after the first rainstorm. And then when the second rainstorm hit, it was like, oh, well, it's kind of like just get what you can out of it at this point because it's too cold. Things are cropped too heavy. And, you know, you're just going to have to do the best you can with what you got. And some people bailed on contracts. Some fruit didn't get picked. Because of, you know, lack of management, things of that nature. But it sounds like, you know, if you had done some of this work, you know, in the summer months when maybe you should have, you could have sold at least a big chunk of fruit. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars of contracts here that might have been viable had some of this work been done. So, you know, from the buyer side of it, it's easy for me to look at that through some rose-colored glass and say, oh, there are growers out there that clearly didn't kind of pull their weight this year. And then vice versa. They can come right back and say, hey, like you guys are used to producing X amount at X quality. It's a lot of money for us to do, you know, farm that way. And because you're buying less, we can't afford to do a lot of the things that maybe you are asking of us. So I do want to say, and like the caveat maybe to all this or like the asterisk next to it is that nothing, I've not heard of anyone being adversarial about it. Everyone's trying to figure out this industry and kind of where it is in the tumultuous waters that we're in to make sure that we can all continue to work together and make great wine together. I'm sure there's a falling out somewhere in the ether this year, but everyone that I've talked to, whether it's the folks that we're buying fruit from or just talking to friends and the relationships they have with their farming teams and or the growers they source from, everyone is still in this together. It's not as though, you know, it's a, again, not an adversarial thing, but it is business. And sometimes that can get a little feisty at times. I'm very curious to see how this year shakes out. I'm very curious to see where the grape crush report is, how contract negotiations go next year for fruit. It's going to be the Wild West. You know, it's, you know, I'm very curious to see how it all shakes out. I, looking at my crystal ball right now, now that I've mentioned it for a third time, I'm not expecting next year to get any better for anybody. I think we're on a little bit of the rebound right now, but it's going to be a long haul to get back to kind of the golden age that we had post 2011, when the wine industry out here just went gangbusters. I mean, I think we're a couple years away from that happening again, but we're hopefully on the up and up. We will see. I'm very curious. I think it's going to take at least one more year of a kind of a reset when it comes to, you know, pricing of grapes, you know, the negotiations and stuff that we have with the folks that we source from in this industry and how we do business. It's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes out. No doubt about it. Now, between those couple of things, you know, how this vintage is kind of shaken out, the lack of wine that's being made from this vintage specifically, and kind of what the future of those relationships, kind of, you know, inter-industry relationships are out here, how does that affect you guys, right? We should probably touch on that a little bit. Number one, I'm a little worried for you guys, because if my hypothesis is correct, and in the next few years, we do see a kind of bounce back and things start to get back to normal, the big issue is going to be that there's going to be an undersupply of wine in 3 to 4 years. You know, maybe 2 to 3 years if, you know, things really bounce back fast, which I don't think they're going to, but we'll see. So what happens when supply goes down and demand goes up? Economics 101, right? I mean, I will say again, this is another one of those years where like our costs are going up anywhere from like 7 to 10% across many things. We're having to deal with a lot of tariffs, so things are up 15% in some categories of supplies that we need. So it's not getting any cheaper to make the wines we want to make. And we're potentially making less wine this year. Many of us are making less wine this year, which means, again, low supply, and potentially on the horizon, high demand. That means, well, price increases, most likely. You know, maybe some people, you know, especially if costs continue to rise, you're going to see some price increases. This is, you know, I think we've gone about 2 years without having to make any ourselves. This next year, it might be the case. You know, as we, you know, with some stuff that's in bottle, when we go back and revisit those and start releasing them, we're going to have to probably make some tough decisions to make some price increases here and there to account for some of that. You know, especially when it comes to the higher quality corks that we use, when it comes to the new barrels that we use. You know, these are all things that are going to hit our bottom line, and they've already hit our bottom line. And that's going to be really, really tough. Now, the balancing act there is that if grape prices continue to fall, then maybe it levels out and you won't see as many price increases as you might expect, because one of the main, you know, driving costs of, you know, the fruit that we need to make the wines that you want, maybe it balances out. You know, we talked about that episodes ago where, you know, hey, fruit costs are down. Does that mean our wines are getting cheaper? Not necessarily, because the price of everything else has gone up, right? So, you know, maybe there's a balancing act to be had there where the fruit continues to drop and we have these costs rising in other ways. Maybe that levels out a little bit. So the cost, you know, or the price increases you might see as consumers isn't quite as dramatic as you might expect. If the industry bounces back in a big way and fruit is in very high demand again, and those prices go back up next year or the year after, man, that's going to be kind of a perfect storm. You know, we just haven't seen the cost of doing anything else go down. I mean, our insurance is way up. Google's charging me more for our emails and shit. Like, we're, you know, MailChimp, the services that we use for marketing. Glass has gone up. Corks are up. Barrels. I'm paying close to $400 more per barrel than I'm used to paying. Like, that's tough. That's tough to absorb. You know, so fruit costs can continue to go down, but if everything else is going gangbusters, it's like, oh, what do we do? So I'm a little nervous for consumers, and I am one of those, because I like buying wine. I like drinking wine. I know I'm drinking gin. It's a Vesper, so it's gin and vodka and a little bit of Blanc, but whatever. I'm taking a break. I drank a lot of wine over the last few days. I needed just something a little bit refreshing, you know? Also, it's the Vesper martini. James Bond drinks them. Like, what are you worried about? It's great. It's a great martini. Great martini. So it's very, I think that's kind of the next big hump that we as an industry need to get over, is we need to really see how this grape market's going to shake out. I think it's going to take at least another year for that to kind of start to get back to somewhat even ground. I'm really hoping that between tariffs and other costs and things, I hope that starts to, you know, ratchet back a little bit. you know, it's insurance is the same way. Like, I would love to go a year without having to increase what we have to pay for insurance. I mean, it's up another, I mean, close to 20% this year, I think. You know, as we go into a new year, like, we're going to have to pay 20% more for it. Like, it's just crazy what we're having to deal with. Maybe it's not that. That's pretty close. It's somewhere, maybe it's 15. Like, let's say 15, because I'll try and be optimistic about the whole situation. But it's wild. It's wild out here right now, you guys. But silver lining. Let's try and find it, because we can bitch and moan about, you know, the current state of the industry and business and all that all we want. The silver lining are the vintages we have to look forward to. And we touched on that at the very beginning. It's like this is how I'd like to put a bow on this particular episode, especially it being our first one back and diving right back into kind of like the harvest recap thing. As I've gone through the cellar, and this is very traditional for me, is that before December comes around, I try to taste through everything that we've barreled down. Sometimes it's a little funky. It's still going through its primary fermentation, its malolactic conversion. The wines are still very much in this raw kind of primordial form. But I go through and I taste through all those barrels, which I think it was like 200 barrels or so that I tasted through, give or take, over the course of about 3 days. And I do that because I want to start to understand the vibe of this season. And we mentioned, you know, that these cool years, they can be a little edgy. They can be a little rough around the edges. I think the beautiful thing about what I've tasted so far is, one, there's a lot more concentration than I was expecting. These wines have some layers to them that I think are very exciting. That given the time that they're going to be aging, they're going to turn into something very, very delicious. Time will tell. Again, these wines have been in barrel for weeks at this point. Not even months, but weeks, days even in some situations, right? So that's very exciting. Number two, kind of leaning into my own personal style and wines that I love to drink, these wines and the acidity, is amazing. High acid kind of year. I mean, these wines are bright. They're fresh. They've got this lift to them that Napa hasn't seen in a while. Even 2023 is a long, drawn-out season. That's the closest thing we've had to it. 2011 is the last time that really happened. And again, going back to like the white wines I mentioned, they're fucking gangster, you guys. I can't even tell you how excited I am for white wines. They're going to be outrageous. 2025 white wines are going to be some of the best made in recent history, period, full stop, right? But the reds, of course, what we're known for, they're feisty right now. They are feisty. I'll give you that. But they're babies. They're trying to figure it out. But again, that depth, those layers that are already there, that lift and that brightness that's in these wines. I mean, this is a loaded statement, but if you like eating food and drinking wine, this vintage is going to go, that's peas in a pod, right? Some of these wines in their youth, I'm guessing, maybe not the put your feet up on the couch, you know, enjoy a glass while watching the game or in the hot tub or something like that. They're probably not going to be just those easy, crushable wines in their youth. But man, you throw them against some food, one of your favorite home-cooked meals, or taking it out to your favorite restaurant, it's going to be gangbusters. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, it's tasting them on their own might be a little jarring just because of the structure of them and kind of how intense they are in their youth. But man, a little bit of food is going to go a long way with this vintage, and these wines are going to be perfect for food pairing. Like that, I'm calling it as it is. Like that's happening. That is going to happen. The only thing we need to figure out is how approachable are they on their own. You know, maybe it's a vintage that we decant a little bit more. You make sure that you open it up and swirl it a little bit more. Get out your favorite aeration device and use that a little bit more with these 2025s. But despite what was a cool, rainy, challenging year, from what I've tasted so far in barrel samples from both in our cellar and from others, I'm excited because I can see how these wines already are going to fit onto my Batman utility belt and how they're going to integrate into what we do and how we love to live our lives how we like to eat and drink. That's why I'm incredibly excited about 2025 and where it's going to go in the next few months, year, many years as it ages. All right. It's almost Christmas, you filthy animals. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the nice thing about having a couple of months off, few months off, is that I have content coming out of my ears right now. We have so many things that we need to cover in the coming weeks. I'm very excited to be back. I appreciate you all and your patience with me during what was an inordinately busy harvest season, given kind of what came down the pipeline. We're going to get back on track and we're going to get back to our weekly Wednesday posting. Please, as always, be sure to like, subscribe, follow the podcast wherever you're consuming it. Follow us on our social networks on Instagram and YouTube in particular, but check out the social media network formerly known as Twitter and the Book of Face, because we post stuff on those as well, just automatically as we get stuff out there. Head to our website, mtjawines.com, blairpaytonwines.com. Check out our wines. Please be 21 years of age or older. You can find out more information about our mailing list, wine club, all that good stuff while you're there. Have an amazing rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.